So good morning, everybody. My name is Vince. I'm one of the teachers here at Friends Church. We're kind of halfway through a series that's kind of the greatest hits series. Did everyone pick up that that was Jeff as a child, let's say? Doesn't he just look like he's so into it? Someone asked me if it was Cliff Richard. Who was it? Keith Richard? Something? Does anyone know Cliff Richard? I had no clue who that was. Oh, does it look like him? Oh, there we go. So we got Cliff Richard to come in and send us a baby picture. So one of the top downloaded messages in Friends Church history is the message I'm going to do today. And so I started it like this. About 13 years ago, I was sitting in the back of my brother's church in Fort Saskatchewan. I remember just kind of chilling. I kind of got there in a weird place. I was up all night the night before, and I'm living on caffeine and sugar, and I pull in, and I'm sitting in the back of the church with my brother, and I see across the church this girl, and I'm like, wow, who's that? And I kind of give my brother a poke. I'm like, hey. And she had this spiky hair and this really slick jacket and these boots, and I was like, wow, that girl's something. So I pulled together all of my courage and my Mennonite suave. Come on, give me a break. Wait till you hear the line. This is what I walked up to her and I said, I very much like your skirt. But it worked. So that's all that really, thank you. So I want you to fast forward a little bit. We're sitting in my apartment in Edmonton, and I remember looking at her, and at one point I'm just like, I love you. It's a kind of like beautiful moment. There's one major problem. You see, I remember as the words left my mouth, it kind of hit her ear. It was just like, what did you? What I didn't tell you was our second date. So I'm like, I don't even know why I said it. It just came out. Like, it wasn't planned or anything. It was just like this, like, wah. I'm thinking, I can see the reaction. She flips around and looks at me, and I'm doing like, okay, I'm into this girl, so I want a third date. But I'm not sure how I'm getting there from here. So I did what any normal guy would do. I just lied through my teeth. I was like, I said I very much like hanging out with you. And yeah, I love hanging out with you. That's what I said. You can just see her kind of eyes doing one of these, like, I'm going, okay, I'm done. Like, this is over. I just screwed it up with, like, one line. I'm like, kind of seconds later, she kind of looks at me. Oh, okay. The words we choose are important, aren't they? It's crazy, you know, you go through life. They're important in all aspects of our life, but when we start talking about our spiritual beliefs, our words are even more important, I think. Think about the last time someone says, hey, let's go for brunch on Sunday. I haven't seen you in a long time. Let's go for brunch. You're like, in your head, you're going, I was planning to come to church because, but if I tell them I'm going to church, what are they thinking at this point? Oh, you're one of those crazy Christian people, you know, telling everyone that they're wrong, going to go to hell, all that stuff. So what do you say? What words do you choose? When I first told this message, I told it to a friend of mine. She's like, oh, I just skipped church that week, and then I don't have to lie or say anything. Okay, that's one option. How about in those family situations? You know, you're sitting around, everyone's chatting. Father, mother, sister, brother, uncle, somebody brings up some topic. And you can just feel the energy in the conversation change. Everyone's kind of like, oh, and it's amazing. Within like 5 seconds, it goes from normal, hey, we're having a great time, to tense or to angry or to something. These conversations just go poorly, don't they? Wouldn't it be great to figure out how to navigate those conversations and actually have them go well? Have the conversation end so you feel closer. You feel like you can have dialogue. It's not awkward. It's not angry. It's not anything. Wouldn't that be amazing? This guy in the Bible, his name is Paul. He knew how to talk about what he believed. I think he could have probably navigated through all the situations I've talked about and just had everyone hanging on his every word. So my question is, I'm guessing the question you have is, how did he do it? After all the times we've screwed this up, how does he make it go well? The thing is, he didn't start off doing it well. In fact, he sucked at it at the beginning. One day he's strolling through Athens waiting for his buddies Timothy and Silas, and the place is literally covered with idols. The joke was, it's easier to find a god than a man in Athens. Like, literally, every street corner is a god. Like, okay, there's the god of that, the god of that, god of that, whatever. And Paul's not having any of this. He's furious. In Paul's world, there's one god. That's it. And added to that, Paul's one of those guys that if you don't see it Paul's way, I think he likes to explain to you that you're wrong and, like, let me explain to you how this is supposed to work, right? So he starts going around telling people that there's one god and you guys have this all wrong. The problem is, he's not doing a great job. In fact, at the beginning they say, what does this babbler have to say? Now, the word babbler in English, it's kind of like someone who talks too much. In Greek, it's a very particular. It's this idea of, you took this garbage, discarded philosophy that nobody thinks has any value. You picked it up, made different pieces go together, and then you brought it forth as something amazing and powerful. Basically, they're saying you're full of crap. And your crap is plagiarized crap. That's what that word means. So they're like, he's not doing well at all. This language keeps getting into trouble, but here's the difference. Paul's learning. He tries to tell people one way, and they don't get it. But he kind of learns from it and goes, okay, I'll try something different. Next guy, he tells them about it, and they kind of get this one section, but the rest falls apart. So he's like, okay, how did I word that? And you see him, he keeps building and building and building his language. And finally, after some drama, he gets called before the religious council of Athens to basically say, okay, does this guy have any validity whatsoever? And this is where Paul starts to work his magic. All of the conversations before have brought him to this moment, and he's on fire. He starts off the conversation with a compliment about how pious the Athenians are in their religious devotion. Imagine that. I'm shocked. I'm sure they would have been shocked. I'm expecting him to get up there and be like, you're all going to hell, and yeah, you all suck. But instead he says, you guys are actually amazing. I was walking through your beautiful city and looking at the objects of your religious passion, and among them I found an altar with a plaque saying, to an unknown God. He says, that unknown God you seek? That's the God I'm telling you about. He starts with what works for them. And then he builds on that. And he ends the discussion with, like, the most beautiful line. He says this. He culminates everything he's saying about God with this line, in him we live and move and have our being. Isn't that a powerful description of God? I remember my grandfather praying that line in his deep, resonant voice. In God we live and we move and we have our being. Problem is that line, it's not a Christian line. In fact, Paul's quoting a pagan poet who actually originally wrote that about the god Zeus. He takes a pagan line, a line that they probably all knew very, very well, and he applies it to his idea of God. He takes their words and he uses them to try and explain what he's trying to say. His word choice is brilliant. Irreverent, but it works. When was the last time you shared something about your beliefs about God and had people ask to hear more? So Paul's audience did. He ends with that line and they say, I want to talk with you more about this. I am interested. The words we choose are important, aren't they? So how did Paul do it? Or maybe who cares how Paul did it? How did we do it? That's the important stuff to figure out, right? How do we talk in Calgary 2013 and have our conversations about spirituality go well? to have people ask for more, to talk more about that. And you know what? It's going to sound a little arrogant, but I think we actually know part of the answer. We've been testing it here at Friend Church for 5 years. When I first heard this message, it was fairly new, maybe 2 years old. We've been testing it for 5 years, and we've seen amazing impact. People often come after they first started coming to Friend Church, and they'll say to me, I don't know what you guys are doing, but most of the time when someone talks to me about this stuff, I get mad and defensive and angry. But you guys, I find myself thinking about what you said the next day, and the day after that, and sometimes for the whole week. How do you do it? So I think we know how to do this. But before I tell you how, I need to set a few things up for you. These are just going to be like presuppositional statements. That's this. Our beliefs are just that. You hear me? We can't prove them. That's why we call them beliefs, not facts. Our theology, our ideas about God, the Bible, the existence of a higher power, none of it, according to scholarship, can be proved. And if you disagree with me on that, I'm happy to go for a beer with you. Pub nights happen regularly. Come on out. We'll chat. But saying our beliefs can't be proven doesn't mean that they're worthless. Somehow modernity has said only provable stuff is valuable. I disagree. I think beliefs have amazing power. Why did you come here today? It's your beliefs that brought you here, right? This belief that there is something more, that there's a journey of spirituality that we're all on, and that somehow this impacts that journey. People don't die for facts, they die for beliefs. The problem is, when we talk about our beliefs like they're facts. Let me show you. You're hanging out with someone at work one day, and someone says this, real estate is always a good investment. Kind of like, really? I have a buddy who bought his condo at the top of the bubble. His still upside down. His mortgage is still bigger than his house is worth. Real estate a good investment? Okay, maybe sometimes. But listen to what you're doing in your head. You're analyzing whether that statement is a fact. Is that the point of the statement? Or is that statement to say is, what is the value of real estate in your life right now? And this is very important. The point of the statements we make about our beliefs is not whether that belief is a fact. The point of the statements we make about our beliefs is to start the conversation about the merit of that belief in our lives. And I think for years, we've been making our statements about God, about spirituality, about Christianity, about religion, about what is fact. And we've avoided this idea of what impact does it have in our lives. We start arguing about whether God exists, whether the Bible is true, whether there's more to life than just this. Instead of creating a conversation, we're creating a question about, is that statement a fact or not? So before I go on and show you how to pick the right words, let me say this. If you choose to speak about your beliefs like they're facts, our society doesn't seem to take a high view of this. In fact, let me be blunt. If you do this, most people will think you're an idiot. Either you know your beliefs are not facts, but you say them anyways, in which case you're a liar. Or you don't realize that your beliefs are not facts, in which case you're kind of a moron. And so either way, people don't talk to idiots. If you say things in a way that makes you think, or them think you're an idiot, they don't want to talk to you. I wouldn't either. Years ago, we learned that we were stating our beliefs like facts. And we did it without realizing it. Sometimes it was from our passion, our fervor, any of those things. Sometimes it was just, that's the way you talk about spirituality, because that's how we grew up with it. It wasn't until someone disagreed with our beliefs that we realized what we were doing. And then all it took was an acknowledgement that what we're saying is a belief. And it all went away. So let me show you how this works. So these are just random statements that some Christians believe. I'm not saying you need to. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm not saying I do. I'm not saying I shouldn't. But just throw them out there. So the dishonest way of saying it is this. The world is 6,000 years old. An honest way of saying it is, I believe the world is 6,000 years old. Just two words. Dishonest, God created the world. Honest, when I see the complexity of the world, it seems like God might have created the world. Little language just hints to people, oh, this is my belief. Everything that happens in the world is controlled by God. I believe that everything happens in the world is controlled by God. People say Jesus is God. I believe that Jesus is God. That's all you need to do. Even me, stating your beliefs like you can prove them leads the world to think you're an idiot. That is a statement of fact. It should have been a belief, right? But you notice how I said it. I said, stating your facts like you can prove them leads some of the world to think you're an idiot. You just got to soften your language a little bit. In each case, I'm just being honest and using a verbal cue that says, this is a belief. I want you to take this as a belief, not as a fact. Look at how our church fathers first stated the beliefs of Christianity. They said this, I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. I believe in the Holy Spirit. The words they chose were honest. These are our beliefs. These are not facts. Now, some of you are saying, hey, that's not always the case. When I'm talking with my buddies, I say facts or beliefs like they're facts all the time. It's no big deal. And the interesting thing about how our society seems to work is this. When someone states a belief as a fact, and you believe the same belief, it won't register. Let me give you an example. I'm an introvert. I'm like top of the chart introvert. If I'm sitting up on top of a mountain by myself, no one, you know, hours around, I'm just thinking this is the best thing in the entire world. I'm recharging, I'm relaxing, life is good. Now picture Jeff in the middle of nowhere. Is he going to say this is perfect? I don't think so. He's going to say, why are there not a party over here? Come on. We've been watching each of you have these conversations for years. At work, with your family, your friends. And we've watched them crash and burn. Honestly, I have crashed and burned on this for years until we figured this out. And it's painful. Something as important to us as our spiritual journey creates a wedge between us and the people that we love. It's horrible. And that's why we're so passionate about this value we have at Friends Church. Because we can see what it has done for you and for us and our conversations and our relationships. And so we wrote it right into the core of Friends Church when we say it this way. We value being honest about what can be proven. Simple. State your beliefs like their beliefs. That's why before these messages, I preach this message to somebody, and they go through and they watch for that for me to say, maybe you need to soften your language here a little bit. I don't think you can prove that. I think that's a belief. I'm telling you, this type of language, when you get it right, it's amazing how well these conversations can go. So, when I first did this message, I had a secret weapon. It was one of those weapons that once you use it and blow it up, you can't use it again. And I only have one secret weapon, and I used it. So unfortunately, I can't do live for you guys what I did last year. So I decided to do the second best thing. We had a great recording of the interview I did. So I bought up a guy, and I interviewed him, and I wanted you to see what I was trying to show you today, see how it works. So Sam, when you have a second, can you roll it? So I've decided to try something a little bit different here. This might go well or might go poorly. I'm not sure. We've never tried this at Friends Church. I want to try and show you guys this live. So here's what I'm going to do. I have a friend who basically has a radar for this thing. This guy is on fire. He's the guy that if you were at a wedding and he found out you're a Christian, you better be right on your game or he will eat you up and spit you out. And he's been coming to Friends Church for a while, but again, he's got a nose for this stuff. And I love this guy. Whenever we have a conversation, it's just a blast. So here's what I decided to do. I decided to have him sit outside today so he didn't hear what you guys heard. He's not looking for the language that I pointed out to you. After, yeah, this is going to go well. Here's hoping. Okay. So what I've asked him to do is basically sit outside, and I'm going to invite him here in just a minute. And literally what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask him questions in two different ways. One in the way that I told you was honest, and one in the way that I told you was dishonest. And now I want you to pay attention very carefully to how he responds to the different way I ask questions. What you'll probably find is when I ask him questions that are dishonest, he will attack the statement that I make. When I ask a question, even a question that he completely disagrees with, but I do it in an honest way, he'll start engaging in the question, talking it through. So, hospitality, can we get Corey in here? Now, one thing before I get in here. The purpose of this is to show you how conversation works, not to show my personal beliefs. So I'm going to kind of allow myself some flexibility to basically say what I need to do to make this interview work, okay? So, Corey, are you coming? I see him coming. I want everyone to give you a big round of applause to Corey Gates for coming up in here and doing something that's a bit of a challenge, I think. So, was it a little bit quiet out there, or kind of boring sitting out there for a while by yourself? Okay. Everyone, this is Corey Gates. This is everybody. Corey, why don't you just start by telling them maybe what you do for a living?
Sure. I'm a Unix system solution specialist at Shaw. That means that I take care of all of the high-end systems that make sure that all you fine people get your bills every month. And I really appreciate you paying those bills as well.
I always think he's got a... I wish he had the job that get us cable. You know, he's the guy, the cable guy, but no.
No, I usually tell people I'm a computer geek because it's much easier.
So, if I say to you, I believe computers make the world a better place.
That's a tough one. I mean, for some people they do, you know. For other people they don't. For me, it's given me a life. It's given me a way to earn a living, I should say. But for other people, it's taken away their jobs, right? So they certainly don't feel like computers have added to their lives, I'm sure.
Do you think as a whole that, though, computers have allowed us to be a more effective society?
Effective is a tough word. Effective in what way? I mean, I certainly it's improved the amount of productivity that any given person can do. But does that make us effective? I don't know. Are we using money as a way of determining how effective we are?
That's a good point.
I would say to that as well. Like, you know, you see everybody walking down the street with their iPhones or their iTouches or whatever.
Don't slam that. That's me. I'm an introvert. I just want to have a quiet time.
Hey, fair enough. I'm an introvert too. I get that. But I mean, as far as a method of communication and being in community where you're immediately around, it's not very effective.
Okay, let me change the subject. Okay. Relationships are easy.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
That being said, I love my girlfriend dearly.
Good answer. Okay, let me try another one. I believe that God exists.
Okay. That's, you believe God exists, that's fine. I don't know what you where you want to go with that, but it's a choice that you've made, and that's fantastic. It's your belief.
Okay, everyone should send aid to Rio Azul.
That's a tough one. Not everyone is in the situation in their life to be able to do that. I mean, I know we live in one of the wealthiest countries in the world, and we are very fortunate. We're amongst the most wealthy people to have ever lived on this planet. But everyone's got their own unique situation.
Okay. Let me try something else. Go a different direction altogether. I believe that everybody could experience God.
Yeah. Again, you know, the difference there is you using the word believe. It's if you believe everyone can experience God, that's great. If you're telling everyone they will or they should, it's a different story.
Okay, good point. Everything you need to know is in the Bible.
That's a big doozy statement right there, Vince.
Okay. Instead of going into that, why don't I just go to another one?
Okay.
I believe a man could live in a whale for 3 days.
Oh, come on. There are certain scientific facts that you can't get around. I mean, regardless of whether you believe it or not, I have looked into this.
He thought this was the interview was going to be about this topic.
So I had
he's
no idea.
All ready to go.
The largest mammal on the planet, the blue whale, has an esophagus about yay big. You know, maybe a grapefruit. So there's no way you're getting down there. So some of the smaller whales do have large enough esophagus, but then their stomach is so tiny that you're just going to get pummeled to death by anything that's in there. So
I just want to know about me being in there, and then he swallows the shark whole, and then me and the shark are...
You and the shark are fighting it out amongst a bunch of hydrochloric acid and no oxygen. It'd be an interesting combination.
Okay, let me go to another one. God has a plan for each of us.
That's a tough one. I mean, there are parts of me that would like to believe that that's the case, but to hear it as a statement of fact, I think that's a tough one for myself to accept. I think it's a tough one for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. When you can go along a huge line just on that statement, and you get into things like fate and and the idea willpower.
Okay.
Not willpower, but that's a much tougher one, you know.
So let me stop you right there. Folks, without him even knowing what's going on, did you notice what he did? Can we get those ones back on the board, Nelson? When I talked about I believe statements, usually what you would do is you would talk about them. You'd engage in them. You'd chat with me about them. When I talked about something from this side, where I just stated them as a fact, usually your answer was, Now, everyone, you've never seen these, so this is what we were doing. This is what the crowd was watching while you were talking. Sometimes when I made a statement and he wasn't sure that if he believed in it, you could tell he would engage in it a little bit more. Has God has a plan for each of us? He was kind of going, okay, yeah, I can see that. You can tell he's thinking about it, right? Yet when I talked about these ones, you engaged in them fairly significantly. So without you even knowing it, you showed live what I was trying to say the whole time. So let's get everyone give Corey a round of applause. Thank you, buddy. Well done. Okay, now you can go sit down in a normal chair and I'll finish this thing.
Was that good, huh? Thank you for doing it. Let's give Corey a round of applause. He's right here. I remember sitting him down and saying, so I want to interview him. And he's like, what about? And I'm like, well, I don't want to tell you. He's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I just want you to be Corey, and come, I was going to ask you a bunch of questions, and it'll be great. And so, a lot of trust. Thank you. I value that. You thought I talked fast now, huh? Do you hear how fast I talk? I slowed it down a little bit for you guys. So, imagine using honest language when you're telling somebody what you believe, about your spirituality, about things that are important to you, but you can't prove. Imagine them going, well, telling your family that these beliefs you have and telling them about the impact that they have in your life and having them listen to you. Telling your coworkers that, yes, you do believe in a divine entity in the universe. And have them want to talk about that with you for a little while. When you choose words that are honest and when you're communicating a belief, the conversation just seems to continue. That's what I want for all of us, myself included. So think back to the conversations you've had that didn't go well. Or maybe the conversation you avoided altogether. Can you imagine how nice it would be if your words got people relaxed? That those conversations stayed open and honest and relaxed. And maybe even fun. Can you even imagine that? Can you even fathom having a conversation about God with a friend who's an atheist, and you both leave feeling closer than when you started? Can you imagine talking about your spirituality with a friend, and in the end, they seem curious about the journey you're on? That would be amazing. And that's why I've spent all this time today talking about the importance of the language that we choose. Because I've seen it time and time again, how being honest about our beliefs just creates a calm conversational environment. It seems to have the power to create such amazing dialogue. Gone are the fights, the awkwardness. Gone is the prolonged silence and the angry yelling matches. In its place, great conversation, connection. So let me implore you, when you're speaking about your beliefs, be honest that they are your beliefs. Don't try and hide them as facts, even if you believe them so strongly. Because the word choices you choose are important. If you choose the wrong ones, that conversation is probably going to go down. If you choose the right ones, chances are it's going to be a great conversation. So, I want to encourage you to go out there and have great conversations.